I'm Dan Rodericks, and this is Midday. Brian Voltaggio started out as a sous chef in a hotel restaurant. He came to national fame as a finalist on Bravo's Top Chef and Top Chef Masters. And in 2012, he was named a James Beard Award semi-finalist for the Mid-Atlantic. Today, he's executive chef and owner of several restaurants in the region, including the acclaimed Volt in Frederick and the new Family Meal at Baltimore's Inner Harbor. His new cookbook is Home, Recipes to Cook with Family and Friends, with dishes inspired by the foods of the Mid-Atlantic. Brian Voltaggio joins us for lunch to talk Chesapeake comfort food, crispy oysters, cheesy grits, and his take on the Maryland crab cake. That's Midday after the news from NPR. And welcome to Midday, everyone. Dan Rodericks here. Thanks again for joining us. Brian Voltaggio has been cooking professionally since he was in his 20s, working in hotel restaurants. Today, the Frederick native, the first chef to compete in both Top Chef and Top Chef Masters on Bravo, you'll remember him from that, is the owner and executive chef of several restaurants in our region. And now he's out with his own cookbook. A few years ago, Brian co-wrote a cookbook with his brother Michael, who was also the Top Chef contestant and a restaurant owner in California. Now Brian has his own cookbook, Home, it's called, simply Home, Recipes to Cook with Family and Friends. Little Brown is the publisher. And in this cookbook, Brian Voltaggio uses local ingredients from the Chesapeake region to create dishes. You might call it Chesapeake comfort food, a lot of this. Maryland crab cake sandwiches, or this one I like, I'm going to ask him about his crispy oysters with collard green Caesar salad. And he also riffs on some old standbys to give them an updated taste, like pork ribs with kimchi and Dr. Pepper. We'll have to ask him about that. The book is filled with beautiful photographs, too, of these creations, and I'm already hungry just from looking at the photographs in the book. Anyway, Brian Voltaggio, it's nice to get you on the Midday Show.
Oh, it's great to be here. Thank you very much.
I spoke with you shortly after one of those competitions on the phone.
We spoke after Top Chef. The original,
I think so.
The original. And back, that was in 2010.
Quickly, Michael, how's he doing? He's in California, as I say, right?
Mm-hmm. He's doing great. He just has a new show just came out called Breaking Borders on Travel Channel. So it's on Sunday nights.
What is that like? What's the approach on that show?
It's actually really cool. It's getting two members, two parties together that have some sort of a conflict. I mean, most recently, you just did one. It was on a Mexico-Arizona border. And they get two groups from each side and sit down, and Michael cooks a meal using ingredients from the region. He just did one in Sarajevo. He was in Ireland.
It's to get people to talking while they're eating good food.
So food is powerful. Food can get people to the table, and maybe they can discuss their differences, which is pretty neat. It's a great concept, and he's doing really well with it.
Breaking Borders on travel.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, very good. Well, it's nice to have you here. If you don't mind, I wanted to count through the restaurants that you have now. You had Volt, of course, when you went on Bravo.
Right.
Right, because that goes back a ways. Volt is your first restaurant.
We opened that in 2008, and I think it was only 7 months after we opened, I went on the show. It was the hardest decision I ever made, but it turned out to be worth it.
Because you had just opened the restaurant?
Yeah, you work your entire life, and then, to open up something and then you leave, after only 7 months, it's... It was a difficult decision, but obviously very fortunate after going on because I beat my brother on Tottenham. I always try to say that, but
I wasn't going to mention it again. But
no, I know. But I came runner up. But the cool thing was, Michael and I both are staying there at the end, and since then we've done some pretty incredible things. Been very fortunate, after the show to go on and open restaurants in our region, but then also we do a lot of work with in our backyard with No Kid in Hungary and Share Strength, and I've been committed to charities and stuff in the area, but then also just cooking in this Mid-Atlantic region, which is just a lot of fun.
Did you hear me say I wasn't going to bring up that Michael beat you on Top
Chef?
No,
yeah, I know.
Is that sensitive? How is it now?
The good thing is that everybody confuses us, so I still kind of get away with every once in a while. I'm like, Michael, I won. And I'm just kidding. No, but, like I said, in the end, it was a great opportunity for the two of us, and, it was just a lot of fun. I mean, I like competing. It was a good time. Having restaurants and doing all of these things and there's a lot that goes on during the course of the day with that's not related to food. And so sometimes when I compete, I mean, that's kind of why I went back and did Top Chef Masters, because I was able to go in there, and once the clock started, the only thing I got to think about was the food. And right. that was it. And right. so it was almost like a vacation.
Mm-hmm.
It was kind of a relief.
Mm-hmm.
But
not,
it was
not
also
thinking about the business of food,
right.
just food, right?
Right.
Yeah.
You know, and thinking about the thing that you love. And so, and maybe that's why, you know, I got all the way to the end, because, you know, it's kind of like a nice relief and more of a R&R.
Since those days, well, Volt is still going, of course, in Frederick, but then there's Lunchbox in Washington.
Mm-hmm.
And Agio, which is here in Baltimore.
Right.
At Power Plant Live.
Right.
Range in D.C. area. Mm-hmm. Where is Range?
It's in Chevy Chase.
Chevy Chase.
So.
And then the family meal, the family meal in Baltimore at Pier 4 opened up in late 2014, at the end of the year,
yeah.
right?
Well, we opened it in January.
Okay.
So it was late 2014, but then we opened up fully in January.
Okay, and you have a Frederick location, an Ashburn, Virginia, and a mm-hmm. Richmond location
which
for family meal.
Recently just opened two and a half weeks ago.
Which one, the one in Richmond?
In Richmond, yes.
Well, good for you. And there's one in Frederick.
Right.
Okay, I wanted you to talk a little bit about family meal, the concept there, because, I mean, the name of the restaurant sort of gives it away.
Yeah.
But there's a direct connection between family meal and your book, Home.
Absolutely. You know, family meal in the restaurant business, you know, for those who, you know, have, you know, been a waiter or cook or something like that in the business, is typically signifies that meal that you have shared with the cooks in the restaurants, normally a gratis meal that's given to everybody that's working. But for me, family meal, what that means is, you know, getting people down at the table surrounding food. I mean, now with everybody's busy schedules, I have a young family. We have a 7-year-old, 3-year-old, and a 21-month-old, and every single one of them has an activity or something going on. And so, you know, Michael and I grew up in my family and my sister, we all sat down at 5:30 and had dinner together. And so now I think in these days where everybody's like so busy, that's not an opportunity anymore. So I wanted to create a restaurant. It was kind of selfishly, my business partner, Hilda, and I, we both have, you know, young children.
So Hilda Staples, right?
Hilda Staples, yeah. There's like, we don't have, I mean, there's a lot of great restaurants in Frederick, but it's not a metropolis. I mean, there isn't, you know, there isn't 1,000 restaurants. So, you know, we kind of created it also for ourselves too. So we'd have a place to take our families. And so it's a very special place. It's one where you get breakfast, lunch, and dinner in most locations all day long. It's very approachable food, you know, comfort style things I like to eat on my day off. You know, a lot of those recipes you'll see have either been, you know, adapted to and in this book, you know, from Family Meal, or there's recipes that I cooked at home that I actually brought to the restaurant. And so, you know, this new book is, you're right, it ties into the concept, because, you know, the point of Family Meal is to, you know, create a meal where people, you know, can have that experience that they could or might be missing.
Yes.
You know,
thinking,
their own home.
What I get from this book is you're thinking, okay, so a lot of people can't cook and have a family meal together every night at 5:30
right.
or 6 o'clock as you did. But maybe on a weekend they can do that, or Friday night, or
mm-hmm.
Sunday supper, or a brunch or something, or a good big family breakfast on Saturday
right.
or something like that. So is that what you're getting at here?
Absolutely. Yeah. I mean, if you look through the pages of Home and you see the way that I categorize the book, I mean, first you'll see that I have some pretty non-traditional holidays like Super Bowl Sunday, because to me that's a holiday.
It's a food holiday.
Yeah,
it is.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
But it's also, I mean, it's true to me being at home. You know, I'm not home every day. This isn't a 30-minute meal book, because if it was,
it's not.
You know, I'd be home on Thursday night doing it. You know, there's no Thursday night supper in here.
No, this takes a little more work.
Yeah. Yep. You know, there are meals that take a little bit of time. It's more about planning. It's not hard to cook this. It's very easy. The skill set is you know, novice to. I don't even know how to classify a cook, but, you know, at home. But I mean,
I say a weekend warrior.
Weekend warrior, yes.
Yeah,
that's a good approach.
Yeah.
But it also tells you and teaches you how to build up to that meal. You know, Thanksgiving shouldn't be tackled in one day. Everybody tries to get up at 5:30, 4 in the morning, I've heard, and try to tackle the entire meal in one day. You're absolutely out of your mind. You need to start 7 days ahead and start your planning. And so I kind of touch on that and talk about that, but also, you know, getting used to your kitchen again and getting in there and utilizing friends and family also that are in your household or might be coming over, and let them do some of the prep work too. Because, you know, cooking is not, you know, where you just go in and you're cooking a great meal for somebody and you're not participating in what also is going on at home. It's a place where everybody gathers, you know, and it's a place where everybody should be a part of it. And so it kind of, you know, teaches you to rely on others, too, to make this happen.
You have some pointers in there for what you need to pull all this off in the kitchen as far as having the right tools. And some of those things I've heard before, you know, make sure your oven is correct. And if not, you need to have a meat thermometer.
Right,
you need to have a thermometer that works in the oven. Make sure your knives are sharp.
Right.
And then you mention a scale, a kitchen scale, and a digital kitchen scale, in fact, you say. And you say, make sure you get one of these. Spend about $30 and get one.
Right.
Once you start using it, you'll wonder how you got by without it in the past. So I wanted to ask you about that.
So
somebody who's never used one in his cooking.
Well, I mean, one of the great things about having a scale is scaling up and down in a recipe, because, you know, I kind of fought to have metric system put into the book, you know, alongside, you know, traditional tablespoons and cups and so forth. Because, you know, in a professional kitchen, for us to scale up and scale down a recipe, it's very easy because you just multiply. And you get a more accurate measurement by using that. But then also just think about if you're just baking a cake or making a batter, like the pancake batter that's in here. You put the bowl into the scale, and then you just add your ingredients for the weight. And you're there in the same measurement, in the same bowl. You don't have to get another tool out or, you know, get four or five measuring cups out to figure out how to put the batter together. You're simply just using a kitchen spoon and adding flour, adding baking soda, adding salt. And it's just a very it's a very efficient way to build a recipe. And not only that, I mean, like I said, the accuracy is just so much better. And then once you get to the point of, if you really dive into this book and you see like how we measure salt, for example, I measure salt at a certain percentage. We found when I first wrote our first book, Vold Inc., is that the gone are the days of two tastes. We can actually measure precisely a properly seasoned savory dish. So we take the whole volume of a soup. So you take a finished soup and put it on a scale, and it weighs 1,000 grams. You multiply that times 0.005 or 0.5%, and that's going to be your salt addition that you would add to the
Because that is an important question, how much salt actually goes into how much soup.
No, and I know it's getting into a lot of detail of that, but, you know, that's how we scaled the recipes throughout the book. So you shouldn't have to, you know, adjust seasoning. Now, some people like things more salty than others, and that's fine. And that's where the two tastes, you know,
and I think
it
would be important in anything involving protein too, right?
Of course.
Chicken or any of the meat dishes that you have in the book.
Yeah, but then I also, if you know, in that
fish as well.
Yeah, in the intro, I also talked about how the refrigerator also is a tool. And, you know, it's really important, too, to pay attention to the temperature of that, because if you set a custard or something that has gelatin in it and your refrigerator is, you know, has like a bunch of hot liquids or something in there and it's not down to the proper temperature, it might take a little bit longer for it to set. But then also the steak dinner, which we were talking cast iron before we started the show. And, you know, cast iron is a really great cooking medium. It's very even. But I talk about the steak dinner where you take a large ribeye and you salt the whole thing on the outside and you let it sit overnight. Well, it does two things. One, it starts to season and penetrate the meat. Two, it dries the surface out. So that way,
you mean it's just open to the air of the refrigerator?
Just open to the air.
There's no plastic involved.
No, and you want to actually, it's almost like the idea of dry aging where, you know, it starts to dry the surface of the meat, but, you know, aging, you know, taking it longer is for flavor and tender, you know, to tenderize it. But then it becomes a safety thing too, because you don't have the wet meat with the moisture on the outside. The surface becomes drier, so when it goes into the hot skillet, it doesn't flare up on you. So it becomes a safer way to cook too. And then we talk about the thermometer.
But you end up with a crispier steak, right?
Yeah, you do. It's really evenly browned, and you get this really great Maillard browning on the outside. The proteins start to brown on a steak, and it becomes really delicious, and it cooks very evenly if you're using cast iron. You don't have to, but it, you know, it certainly is preferred. But then you use an instant read thermometer that actually has a wire, and this is another thing I suggest that you pick up, because everybody always asks, like, okay, how do you get the perfect steak? Like, how do you roast the perfect bird? Well, don't get the one with the pop-up timer, okay? The little, you know, thing that sticks out of the chicken.
I always pull those out.
Good for you. Yeah. You know, get one of these thermometers that has the heat-proof cord that comes out, set the temperature to the finished temperature, and put it in the oven and forget about it. Once it beeps, it's done, you know? And so I explain that in a steak. And we cook it at a lower temperature. It's 250 degrees in the oven. And what that does is it's just enough heat to keep the cooking process going, and it's cooking at a slower pace. That way it's not like this harsh, intense heat on the outside of the meat, which is going to, brown the outside faster, and you'll have this just like a pink interior. This gives it like a really great pink hue all the way throughout the meat. And so you get this really beautiful, delicious, seasoned, juicy steak.
That's really interesting for those of us who have been working at 400 degrees.
Right.
Thank you. It's a new way of thinking. I have to try that. All right.
Yeah. Follow it step to step, and you're gonna get a really tasty steak.
Brian Voltaggio is our guest on Midday for the entire hour. We're gonna go through his cookbook, Home Recipes to Cook with Family and Friends. I've got several pages marked. I want to ask him about. I wish you could see the photographs. It's radio. We'll do our best to describe some of these dishes. But you're welcome to call in too if you have a question for Brian Voltaggio, Super Chef. 410-662-8780 is our local number. Toll free long distance. This is good from Frederick County, 866-661-9309. And our email address, midday@wypr.org. You can send a comment or ask a question by email. We're also on Twitter at @MiddayWYPR or Dan Rodericks. And welcome back to Midday. 410-662-8780 is our phone number here. If you have a comment or question for Brian Voltaggio. Chef Voltaggio is in the studio with us taking a break from... How do you manage all these restaurants, by the way? I was going to ask
lunch
you
hour,
that.
By the way.
It is.
You
know? I know. I'm so glad you could get here because you have a cookbook and you want us. We're going to go through some of these recipes. But yeah. I do wonder about that. Once you establish the restaurants, what your daily routine is, what do you do personally with... What? We're talking about 9 restaurants? Brian?
I know. It was easy.
Between Maryland and Virginia.
Yeah, it was easy when I had Volt because I knew which stove I was going to be at. And mm-hmm. So the hardest decision I make now is like how to plan a schedule where I'm going to be because I want to be cooking in every single restaurant at every moment. Yeah. I want to touch. I mean, hospitality is very important to me. And like, you know, as a chef, I'm creating an experience for somebody and it's very personal. And, you know, now becomes a time where I'm certainly relying on others. And the great thing is I have a really good team. I mean, the team around me shares the same core values and like what I believe in hospitality. And that's why they're part of my team. And a lot of them have grown with me since Volt. And so I'm able to expand and open up new restaurants. I mean, for the most part, almost every single one of my chefs have come through the kitchen at Volt at some part in their career. I have a few new people that and chefs who are fantastic who have come to me, but they also shared a lot of the same ideas. And so, you know, growing this team has become, it's become a great part of what we do. And I'm, like I said, I mean, you know.
Is that still the way you do it?
I'm just one cook. I mean, I'm not, you know, I need many to make it happen.
But is that still the way you do it? In other words, someone gets started working for you, mm-hmm. maybe in Volt, and then they end up at Agio or
I mean, it's not, you know, but certainly, you know, part of what I want to do as we continue to grow is that people spend time in all the restaurants. I mean, because they have to get to know, you know, where we came from and who we are and what we do. And not that any one of the other restaurants, you know, is a direct, direct correlation to Volt, but certainly, I believe in, we started from somewhere and, you know, I want people to understand that. And like I said, I mean, right now, a lot of my cooks and chefs have been with me for a long time and, you know, help able to expand. So that's still there, you know, but, you know, expanding is has its challenges too. You know, I mean, like I said, I mean, the biggest challenge I have is trying to figure out which stove I want to cook at every day, you know?
So you try to visit these places.
I do. I was at Volt before I came here. I'll be in Agio tonight. Mm-hmm. I'll be at Family Meal for the latter part of the day. So I'll be in 3 today.
Hey, just quickly, before we go into the recipes, the concepts on each of these quickly, say lunchbox and range, I was curious about. What was the concept? Mm-hmm. And, well, lunchbox is sort of self-explanatory, maybe. I don't know. Maybe I shouldn't assume that. What would you say about that distinguishes lunchbox from what you do at Family Meal, for instance?
Yeah, well, lunchbox is a more quick-service restaurant, you know, where it has tables and chairs, but it's not table service. You know, at Family Meal, it's sit-down table service. So it's a little bit different.
Mm-hmm.
So it is, you come, you queue up in a line, and there is... soup, salad, sandwiches, and really great drinks. That you know, some of the stuff that we make there, but we also do beer and wine, meaning sodas that we make there in house. And we also have soft serve, which we do, which is really delicious.
Soft serve,
ice cream. Like, right now we're doing a
really?
Mango. Oh, it's delicious. So you need to get
down
there.
Sounds good.
So
how about range?
So range is range is kind of a for a long time, I worked for Charlie Palmer, and I worked at a steakhouse on Capitol Hill. That was my first restaurant back in the D.C. And I really liked that a la carte format of a steakhouse, you know, where you can kind of taste your way through a menu. And, you know, it's a shared plate experience where you're passing things around. It's more family style, I guess you could say. You know, and I want to have a place where you have different size cuts of meats where you can kind of come in. I mean, there we do like this whole pig head, which is like really delicious and crazy, but you sit down and you get these lettuce wraps, and you kind of like, you know, go at it like picking the meat off of it and build these little tacos. And so it's a fun dining experience there. And so it's this nine kitchen, these kiosks that kind of go all the way around, and they all contribute to this massive menu.
And how about Agio?
Agio is, you know, I'm Italian and, you know, a heritage. And so I've always loved that style of cuisine and certainly grew up with some of it, you know, a little bit, you know, in my family, not as, you know, not like many, but certainly I have this affection with pasta and very simply prepared ingredients, you know, put together in a really tasty dish. And so, you know, for me, I wanted to take, you know, what we knew now and, you know, using ingredients in this area and recreate some of the classics of Italy.
Okay. Well, I'm going to start there then. I want to ask you about your recipes from your book, Home. Again, Brian Voltaggio is our guest in this hour of the show of Midday. Squid Bolognese. Now, Bolognese sauce... Classic bolognese sauce is what, Brian?
Well, it's a meat sauce.
Yeah.
You know, typically it can be done with different types of meat. It can be done with beef and pork. But, you know, for me, bolognese is just one of those, you know, sauces are so traditional and have so much, you know, has such history. It's almost, and there's a lot of people now who are doing other bolognese, you know, the seafood inspired ones. What I found though is like shrimp and calamari and cuttlefish, you know, a really great, really great fish that you can actually braise out and actually cook into a sauce, and it has this really rich depth of flavor. I also cut pepperoni into that though too.
Oh yeah,
if you notice that, where you get this like great subtle undertone
of
like a little bit of smoke and
the photograph
and,
I'm looking at is the black squid.
Yeah,
the black squid pasta,
right?
And what's prominent in the photograph is the, I think it's the pepperoni and tomato, right? It's the red.
Yeah.
Red. So this contrasted with the black. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
But you know, so instead of ground meat.
Right.
Pork or beef, what happens to the squid in your bolognese sauce?
So we grind in shrimp and squid in,
so you grind it.
Yeah, we grind it through a kitchen grinder, like a meat grinder. You can get, you know, KitchenAid has an attachment you can kind of throw on your mixer at home. You know, obviously in the restaurants we have, you know, big industrial, you know, grinders, and so but you can also just rough cut it if you needed to. You could just mince it. You can also use a food processor. But the thing is, what you do is you get the same texture that you would have in the ground meat. And actually, you know, at first, like squid or even shrimp, for example, will kind of, you know, seize up and tense up when you start the cooking process if it hits a hot pan. But if you subtly braise that out and you cook it for like 45 minutes or so, it gets this, you know, really tender, rich texture, which is just really delicious. And, you know, it becomes homogenous in the sauce. And it's just really great way to do something a little bit different.
This calls for some wine.
It does, of course.
Some Pinot Noir you have in here.
Right.
340 grams. I'm sorry, no.
Milliliters.
No, 375 grams. 1 2/3 cups of Pinot Noir.
Right.
Right, okay.
So what you do is, once you start to render the pepperoni and then add in the squid and then, some of the other vegetables you sweat out, and then you add some wine in there and cook that down. And it's a really great, base fond to sort of start with to make this delicious sauce.
Well, forgive me for starting off with an Italian dish. It's not really traditional to the
Mid-Atlantic,
but that's okay. I like the riff on it.
But the idea is, like, you know, you're taking shellfish and, you know, you're thinking about it from the bay, you know, shrimp and, you know, well, also obviously, squid. But, in using things that, you know, you would think of in a fisherman's sort of area, port area. That's kind of the idea.
Have you made your own... squid noodles, the black noodles,
pasta. Of course. Yeah.
Oh, you say of course, but I haven't done that yet.
Oh, you haven't? No.
No,
it's fairly
simple.
I'm not
sure I would, too. I may have to go buy those.
You can go find, buy it in the store easily.
I know.
Yeah, there's plenty of places you can get it. So stick to the sauce and, you know, buy the pasta.
Okay. Crab waffles Chesapeake.
Yeah, so this is, you know, inspired by Benedict, you know, like a classic Eggs Benedict, you know, with a... English muffin, a poached egg, ham, and hollandaise, right?
Mm-hmm.
So what we did was we took Belgian waffle. It's like an overnight batter. You just make it and let it sit out, and it ferments overnight. And you fold in blue crab, and then you bake this waffle. And the great thing about the waffle, I'm going to talk about the rest of it, but the great thing about the waffle is, you know, you've had a crab cake where you get that soft interior of the crab. If it's like a baked crab cake, there's little bits of brown crab. When you're pressing the waffle... think about that. Some of the crab meat kind of pools out.
Yeah.
So you get these brown bits of crab. They're kind of like getting nice and caramelized on the edge of the pan.
I see it.
Delicious.
Yes.
And then you get into the soft interior of the crab.
So it's in the batter.
In the batter, yes.
All right.
And so then furthermore, you poach these eggs, place it on top of the waffle, and then a béarnaise. So
A beernaise, not so a beernaise.
Right, a beernaise. So what do you have when you're having crabs? You have beer, butter, vinegar, Old Bay, right? Think about it. I mean, that's a crab feast, right?
Yeah.
In that sauce, you have beer. It's reduced. You have some tarragon. You have some other ingredients. But then you also have some shallot. But then you have a little bit of vinegar, and you have butter. And you emulsify that with the eggs. Mm. And so basically you have, you know, the breakfast backyard crab feast all in one sort of bite. It's really delicious.
That looks great. It's a photograph of this here.
It's very easy to make.
That seems pretty easy. I didn't.
Yeah.
So
hardest part is picking the shells out of the crab when you're getting, get crab meat.
Do you remember how this came to you?
How this dish came
to
you?
Yeah, how this dish came to you. You're thinking, I got to do something with a batter.
Certainly I tell a story about why, you know, in the book, but then, you know, I'm starting to think, you know, when we're talking about, you know, the idea of doing this, I mean, I you know, to me, when I did this at home, I think we probably had crab laying around or something. I can't remember what we did. And it might've been one of those things where we made crab cakes and folded into the batter. I mean, I'm always experimenting things that are very simple and then trying to elevate them a little bit, you know, or try to make it different. I like taking classic flavors that people know, you know, look at it in a bolognese, you know, traditionally it's a meat sauce, but I mean, it can be done differently. Mm-hmm. You can follow the same process and be true to the original, but, you know, have your own sort of riff on it or change the flavor profiles. I mean, certainly nowadays, like, there's a lot of thought when you're thinking about like vegan and vegetarian cuisine. So, you know, I'll just do a really quick example. But, you know, in my first book, when we did Vold Inc., we made this dish that was actually Graham Ritchie, one of my chefs, helped me come up with this thing. It's pretty delicious. Salsify is like oyster root. Tastes like oyster, right? So there's this oyster leaf that also tastes like oyster. So we wanted to create a vegetarian experience of an oyster. So we created a sphere. It's a, you know, a hydrocolloids that create this, like, texture of like something when you put it in your mouth, it kind of bursts in your mouth, right? Hmm. The oyster, when you eat it, when you you get that brininess and you're kind of like chewing through it, but you get these, you know, pops of like water kind of shooting your mouth when you're eating it. And then this oyster leaf has this really great flavor, and we season it with a little bit of malted salt. And then when you eat it, we put it in this shell that we made out of ceramic that was made by pressing an oyster shell to the clay, and then it got fired. So you're actually shooting this vegetarian oyster.
Wow.
And so that just, you know, kind of sums up, like, sometimes as a chef, like, what we do is we go out there and we look for things that, you know, are very traditional and try to almost flip them upside down in our head. Mm-hmm. You know, I mean, try to make something that's a little bit different. I mean, something like a waffle is so simple in form, but can be a vehicle for other flavor. Right. You know, you can do all kinds of stuff. You could, you know, take shredded, braised, brisket and fold that into a waffle that might have a little bit of rye flour. And then you're talking about maybe thinking about Reuben flavors. Then maybe that poached egg might have an emulsification of, you know, a playoff of Thousand Island dressing. So, I mean, there's all kinds of things that you can do, you know, to make things more delicious and more fun.
Before we move away from waffles, pancakes. You have granola pancakes in here. Those look pretty good.
Yeah. No, yeah. The pancakes are very simple and fun. And, you know, it's plated a little bit, you know, of course, artfully. I mean, you could just stack the pancakes if you like, but but you know, I like the textural part of that. So the reason what I'm going for in that granola pancake is, you know, I'm not a kid that used to take, you know, and my dad taught me this, you know, take a sandwich, you put potato chips on it, you know.
Oh yeah. So you have eating, that, you crunch that crunch in the sandwich. Yeah. Right.
Right. When
yeah.
you're eating pancakes, think about it. You got syrup, butter. You know, just thinking about simple pancakes. You know, syrup, butter, and then a soft pancake. Right.
Right.
There's no texture in that.
No.
It's all one note. So put some granola in there and get some crunch. But then also, and you know, it's kind of, is it more healthy? Yeah, I guess so. I mean, you're getting a little bit more grains, but it depends on the type you're using. But, you know, to me, the textural difference is really cool. It makes the dish that much more interesting. So simple. You don't need to make your own granola. Get some granola, get some pancake batter, and put the two together and make your pancakes.
And you have biscuits in here, of course, because you're drawing from the Chesapeake region. This is, I said, Chesapeake comfort food, a lot of this looks like. Any particular thing you want to say about your biscuits and gravy?
The biscuits and gravy. So, well, one thing is I made the biscuits and gravy, you know, we make our own sausage. You don't have to, but I mean, it's a quick sausage. It's a few ingredients. You make it, put it, in the refrigerator the night before. That way, when you wake up, you just start making the sauce. But then what we did is we punched out all the biscuits and then
created little wells.
Yeah. So when you punch the biscuits out, you get all of this, you know, trim that's left over. Well, the trim is just as good as the biscuit that you punched out. So I took that and set it on top of the cast iron skillet. and it baked the whole thing together.
Is that what I'm looking at here? It looks like a series of little wells full of gravy.
Right. So that's the biscuit that was left over after I cut the biscuits out. So
you baked it in a skillet.
Yeah.
I see it. Yeah.
And so we baked the, you know, basically baked the biscuits on a sheet tray, and then the trim that's left over, that lattice kind of look that's left over, and then you get is, you know, this crust or almost like pot pie kind of style sausage and gravy dish.
Right.
Where you can either just dive right into it, but then you could take some of it and pour it over your biscuits.
Oh, that so looks good.
Right. It's delicious. But
it does look good.
But, I mean, what are you going to do with it? You're going to take that trim and, you know, toss it in the garbage? I mean, it's ingredients you can use. And so, you know, with this, you're able to get more yield out of the biscuits.
You have on your menu at Family Meal, I think, chicken pot pie fritters?
Yeah. So
now, I like the sound of that because I'm thinking of something creamy and tasty in the middle and crispy on the outside.
Yeah. So what we do is we stew chicken and, you know, fold in, you know, everything you would find in a pot pie, peas and corn and, you know, other, you know, like carrots and stuff like that. And then we take them and we bread them on the outside. And originally how this whole thing came about, I was actually baking pie crusts. My staff, I thought they were going to, you know, be extremely upset with me because I used to take all the pie crust after it was baked and then grind it down and use that to bread it because I wanted to have that buttery crunch that you would have on the top of a pot pie.
You would just bake the crust?
Bake pie crust.
Yeah.
And then grind them down so we could use that to bread the fritters.
Okay.
Very laborious.
Your staff thought, why are you going through all this trouble?
Right.
Right? Okay.
And so, but I wanted to recreate it for home because this is that one thing that I think when people come over, they always ask me, like, hey, Brian, you know, I'm coming over. I'd love to have this chicken pot pie fritters, have a family meal. So I wanted to put it in the book. Now, this is an example of one thing that I do at home that people, you know, that I needed to share from the restaurant. And so what I found is that Ritz crackers have that same buttery crunch and flavor. So I grind Ritz crackers and then fold and then bread the pot pie fritters with that. So it gets the same sort of buttery, crunchy flavor you would get from the
How do you take the creamy, mushy filling of the pot pie?
Right,
and then get it inside a
So what we do is
you make the
filling, and then we add a slight amount of gelatin to it. But and then what we do is we pour it out into a pan, and then it sets up enough once it cools overnight that you can scoop them out and then roll them, and then start breading them in flour, egg wash, and then the and then the
is the recipe for that in this book?
All right, Super Bowl Sunday.
All right. Brian Voltaggio is our guest. His book, by the way, is published by Little Brown. It's called Home, Recipes to Cook with Family and Friends. More from the cookbook when we get back. What page is it?
195.
Okay. Thank you, Brian. I'm going to mark that one. I have several more to ask you about. By the way, we have a book signing coming up. Brian does anyway. Barnes & Noble book signing.
Well, you could sign too if you'd like.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Sign a couple of copies. Okay. This is out in Frederick.
It is.
In your hometown. This is on Buckeystown Pike in the Francis Scott Key Mall. At the Barnes & Noble.
Excellent
there. Mm-hmm. That's on Saturday at 2 o'clock.
Okay. And we're also going to be giving away samples, too.
Really?
Yes.
Of the pot pie fritters?
I don't know which one yet, but we're definitely going to give away some food. So.
You know, speaking of food, there's a little aroma in this studio now. It's getting over to me, over to my end of the studio, and because Brian was good enough to bring in something for us to sample here at midday. If you have comments or questions for Chef Brian Voltaggio, this is a good time to call. 410-662-8780. Dan Rodericks here on Midday. We'll be right back. Welcome back to Midday. Our guest, Brian Voltaggio, Chef Voltaggio's new book called Home, Recipes to Cook with Family and Friends. I like the sounds of this one, Brian. Tomato and watermelon gazpacho.
Yes. You know, tomato and watermelon goes really well together. You know, the acidity of tomatoes, you know, in their peak of season, which have like a slight sweetness, but then the sweetness of really, really great ripe watermelon, and those two together create this incredible balance. And they're so simple. So you make a traditional gazpacho, and then In this recipe, I made a granite or like frozen shaved ice of the watermelon that goes over the top.
Mm-hmm, boy.
So it's really refreshing.
That looks great. Brian's burger. Interesting looking burger here that involves an egg.
Yeah,
I don't understand the egg. I went to a Baltimore bar and they had a bison burger on the menu. And it came with an egg on top.
Mm-hmm.
And I said, I don't think I want the egg. I wasn't in the mood for the fried egg on top of the burger. Right. So I know this is something of a trend in places, or what?
Yeah,
what
I mean, you're seeing it more and more, and, you know, maybe that's probably just what I caught on to. I mean, I like fried eggs. I like eggs, though, that are, if you look at, you know, the egg itself, it's into a hot pan, you know, a little bit of oil, and you let it sort of brown the outside, but then leave the yolk soft.
Mm-hmm.
And then, you know, to me, texturally, it's really great. And I love the flavor of a browned egg, and I think it's like a really great addition to a burger, because it's just, it's another layer of flavor as you're eating through this. And then, you know, but I also love a bacon burger, but I didn't include it. And I don't like to grind my bacon in, but I also don't, when I'm eating a bacon burger, I don't like to eat it and then it falls apart or it's like tough to eat, you know. So what I did in this case is I ground pepperoni into this first cut shoulder.
I used the first cut chuck.
If you ask for that when you go, because what it is, has a little bit of the short rib, a little bit of the, you know, the meatier pieces of chuck, and so you get is this really well balanced, well marbled piece of meat that you get a good 80-20-90, you know, 10 sort of, you know, fat to meat ratio. When you grind it, it grinds well, it tastes good, it chews well when you're eating the burger, and it's just a really great cut. And then I take pepperoni and I put, like, I think it's like a quarter of it by weight, and we grind that in with the meat, and so you get this. I have this, you know, affection with pepperoni, I guess. I don't know. So you find it throughout.
You're talking my language. It's okay.
But at home, think about this. You get this like flavor burst that you can put into these dishes, into a burger, into the bolognese that, you know, already comes like, it's like this, you know, flavor bomb. It's already ready to go. You know what I mean? There's smoke, there's pepper, there's salt, there's meat. And, you know, it's kind of like already got this, you know, it's almost like adding a seasoning. It's like done, it's ready, it can make things delicious, and adds a layer of flavor. And then also, I'm not afraid to use pepper jack cheese. There's some pepper jack cheese on this burger,
okay.
And there's a little bit of cheddar and some smashed avocado that we smoked. I mean, you don't have to go that far if you don't want to smoke the avocado. It's no big deal, but I love the texture and coolness that you get like from the avocado.
And you top it with this fried egg. Just
yes.
A question on that. I call it pan-fried egg.
Right.
You said browned egg.
Yeah.
Crispy, yet with the yolk. Sunny side up, basically. Right?
Sunny side
now,
up.
Some people, including me, have trouble doing this.
I
often end up for breakfast just scrambling eggs because I don't do this very well.
Right.
So do you have a secret for, I don't know, a cast iron skillet or even Teflon, whatever people are using at home?
Yeah, coated pans are the best.
I which mean,
if
ones?
You get like a nonstick coated pan, it's the best way to cook eggs.
To cook that kind of egg.
Yeah.
And
definitely.
So, but how do you know? I don't like a runny egg.
Right.
But I also like an egg that where the yolk bleeds nicely. So how do you know when
how
you're
do you
there?
Know?
How do you know when you're there?
I mean, I mean, you have to. You definitely have to, you know, be paying attention to it. I mean, the great thing
you
is
you don't
want to
burn
this,
it. You don't want to burn the bottom either.
No, and you're building this burger. Think about it. You want your meat to rest. So let's talk about how you would do this in this particular recipe. Even
okay.
So, you know, you grill your burgers, you melt your cheese, you have that kind of sitting on the side. It's resting, which is a good time for you to crack your eggs. And so, crack your eggs, have them in a bowl, get a nonstick pan, add some fat to it. Get to the point where it starts to shimmer or almost starts to smoke, and then pour your eggs into it. What's going to happen is it's going to immediately set. It's going to start to, you know, pop and, you know, sort of sizzle in the pan. You're going to start to see the edges start to brown. You want that because, I mean, for me, I love the browned egg. I love, like, you know, getting that protein browning on the outside. And then the yolk will start to set. You know, see the white sort of, you know, go from clear to opaque to, like, solid white, you know, on the top around the yolk. And then, you know, you can quickly toss it over if you want to kind of make it over easy style. But if you're, you know, intimidated by flipping the egg, you just turn it off the heat and move it over and just let it set and let the residual heat of the pan cook the egg to the texture that you want.
All right. Thank you, Brian. And serve that on a sesame roll. The sesame roll also shows up in this photograph of your Maryland crab cake sandwich. Mm-hmm. And here we've got this is great looking. So this is the crab cake is on the roll with. Are those Old Bay chips or some kind of?
Yeah, they're like an Old Bay season chip on the top, and then we have this really chunky tartar sauce that you know has a lot of diced pickle and vegetables in it that just is really refreshing. Some dill, and
yeah, but your crab cake. What maybe you're giving away your secrets a bit here.
Yeah,
it is a cookbook.
It is.
It is for sale to the general public.
If you look at the recipe, you will find number one, there's no peppers in it. Which is, that's kind of like the deciding factor around here, right? You know, whether your crab cake is done correctly or Maryland style. But then also it's, majority of it is crab meat in a recipe. You know, it's very loosely put together. the very important thing about this recipe, and this is what I'm talking about when I'm saying, look, you know, this isn't a 30-minute meals book. I make these crab cakes, and they have to set up overnight in the refrigerator, or they have to set up at least for a few hours. Because once you're mixing everything together, you got to think the temperature of that is not, you know, that high. But when you put it back in the refrigerator, things start to cool down and start to, you know, call it seize up or whatever you want to say. But also, the small amount of breading in there starts to what's called pre-gelatinize. So the bread is starting to get moist and then create a structure using the starch. And so it holds everything together. But because I put so little in there, you have to respect the recipe and let it set. And then what you get is this really great, delicious crab cake with little filler.
That's really interesting because the challenge, I guess, for all chefs with crab cakes, home or professional, is as little filler as possible, right?
This is how you do it.
But that's how you do it. You have to
let
it.
It's here. It's right there. It's in those pages.
Okay.
That is exactly how you should do it. If you want the crab cake that you've been looking for, it is there for you.
Okay. And then are these pan fried?
Pan fried, yeah.
Okay.
Pan fried in butter.
Okay, Brian. And I notice you have a lobster roll in here.
Yes.
Thank you very much.
I'm not
of my favorite things in life.
You know, I honestly have never had one from Maine. And so I feel like that people from the region might have issue with me putting a Maine lobster or Maine inspired lobster roll in here. But what I did find with that is we found a cooking process that we found worked really well for making a very delicious lobster roll. One is when we poach it in the bouillon, we take the lobster out and we let it soak and cool back into the liquid that we cooked it in. Because if you think about it, if you're braising something, a lot of liquid comes out. Or if you're cooking something, if you put, you know, carrots into a pot of boiling water, the pot turns orange, right?
Yeah.
So some of the flavor is going back into the water. So we cool down the lobster in that liquid. It keeps a lot of its flavor. You know, it keeps a lot of that salinity that you'd find, that ocean flavor, that really great, delicious lobster. And then we take that and just fold it with this really delicious, slightly spicy, you know, has a little bit of sriracha and soy in this mayonnaise base. We call it like our Trinity sauce. It's like our sauce we want to put on everything. And then we put in these soft buttered split top rolls, and you get this really delicious lobster roll.
You want those split top
rolls? It's so good, and you know it's just. I wanted to talk about the way that we cook the lobster, and that process is in there.
Interesting, and then soft shell crab. I forget now where we are in soft shell crab season. We're not quite there yet.
You know, you're starting to see people like put them on already, but they're not quite ready yet. I mean, you think that I know Maryland season opened up April 1st. I mean, we're starting to see some come around, but the water's got to be a certain temperature before you start to see the crabs, and especially when you start to molt. I mean, a lot of the crabs that you're starting to see now, you'll find that, you know, people bring these crabs in and then they put them into, you know, in controlled environments where they can, you know, start the process, you know, the molting process. But
where do these show up on menus, by the way, in your
restaurants? Yeah, you start, you know, June.
Which restaurants? Do you serve soft shell? I'm curious about, because people from out of town, tourists, people who come to visit here, some don't understand that you do this, right?
Right.
That you eat the soft shell crab with the legs on it and everything. And all
oh,
that.
I know.
And
natives
know about
I
it.
I get a good example of that. I get an example of just hard shell crabs. With soft shells, you know, I typically they'll appear on every menu, you know, in some form. You know, these soft shell crab tacos you might find at family meal. I might find a more composed, you know, dish that might be a sauteed crab that you'd find at Volt. But, you know, I definitely celebrate the blue crab on all the menus.
So this one, this recipe is the taco.
Yes.
So you actually can hold it in your hand, fold it in your hand, and get some lime juice on there. And
lime juice, there's a red cabbage slaw, and then there's also some avocado on that, too. And you kind of roll that thing up and just you go into it, and texturally it's incredible because you get this crispy crab, a soft flour, and soft corn tortilla because I love the... also the textural difference between that and also the flavor. And then, it's just delicious.
Brian Voltaggio, his book is Home. Again, the subtitle, Recipes to Cook with Family and Friends. I'm going to try some
And it's
of
a directive there, too. I was really That was important to me, that tagline. No, originally, you know, when the publisher was talking to me about it, they wanted it to be recipes to share with family and friends.
Yeah.
I want people to actually use the book.
Yeah.
I want them to cook.
Yeah. You don't want it to be a coffee table book.
No, not at all. You hit the nail on the head right there.
The best cookbooks, the ones I have at home, they have oil stains on the pages, right? some flour. You turn a page and I have some flour still in there, left over from
I would be happy if I came over to your house and you had notes. It was it was labeled as you have and, you know, it was creased and the whole nine yards.
Clam chowder.
Yes.
Fritters.
Fritters.
seems this sounds similar to the I'm sorry, the chicken Popeye fritters, right?
Yeah, so we got on this kick, I guess. I mean, we wanted to start frying everything. We also did pimento cheese fritters too, and those are more of a hush puppy style. But the clam ones is like everything you would find in clam chowder. And then we did the opposite. I got in this, I guess, this kick of breading things and using different ingredients. I think almost we made this because we wanted to bread something with saltine crackers because it made sense to us. I mean, there's oyster crackers you get with your clam chowder.
Yeah.
You know, that's what we found is these soda crackers, these saltines would work just as well.
Now I get to crispy oysters, pardon me, with collard green Caesar salad. And this looks gorgeous. I love oysters however you cook them almost. But I'm really interested in this collard green Caesar salad, which...
Well,
collard greens. Looking for new ways to eat collards or any of those greens that are in the market. There's some great greens in the market, mustard greens. But what do you do here? Is the collard raw?
It is.
It is? Okay.
So, you know, washed very well. And the thing is, like, you got to think vinaigrettes or dressings have a high amount of acidity. But, you know, braising green, like mustard greens or even kale, I mean, which you find kale in a lot of salads now, they can marinate. So collard greens, and it explains you how to do this, you know, ahead of time. You know, typically if you take a tender green and you put a vinaigrette on it, you got what, like 5-10 minutes, you know, and then it falls apart.
Yeah.
But if you take like collard greens and you let them sit on the dressing or marinade, then they start to tenderize, and then become, you know, very palatable as a raw state. They're more healthy for you.
Healthy because it's fresh and it's not cooked. I'm assuming you can let it marinate longer.
Yes.
Right?
So it's almost like
overnight?
Well, you got to think about it as a coleslaw. Why does coleslaw only have to be made with cabbage? You know, so in this case, you're taking the thought process of making coleslaw and letting that cabbage marinate and applying it to the collard green. So it results in the same, you know, textural change that you would get, you know, making it more tender.
You know, this is such a great looking dish because you've got the crispy outside of that soft, delicious oyster mixed with the greens and this great
delicious
looking dressing.
Right.
All the textures that you were talking about earlier, they all come together here in this dish.
And this is our claim to the Mid-Atlantic crouton, the fried oyster. So this is a Caesar salad with our crouton.
Right.
You know, this is a Chesapeake region. This is what our crouton should be, a fried crispy oyster.
Smoked shrimp and grits. We're down the last couple of minutes of our hour together, Brian. I'm sorry. Maybe there's something you want to mention from the cookbook, but that looks really good to me, too.
I love them all.
This looks good. Smoked shrimp and grits.
Yeah. So in this...
Page 178, yeah.
Yeah. So in this recipe, you know, this is, you know, a really delicious recipe. But, you know, for me, you know, the grits are, you know, in this case, you know, it takes a little bit of time. You know, you want to take these really, you know, just stone ground grits and then cook them and I use a pressure cooker or a low pot. You know, you could use a what's it called? A crock pot. And actually cook them really slowly. So they get really, you know, all the liquids become very homogenous, gets really creamy. And then we take the shrimp and we smoke it lightly with some charred lemon and then some, you know, seasoning on the outside. And we smoke it slightly and cook it to the point where, you know, they're just slightly underdone, and then we put it over this warm porridge of grits, and we put this beer and yeast emulsion. We use actually yeast in the sauce because I love the flavor and aroma of yeast. It doesn't only have to be found in bread. It's you know, certainly edible, and you can use it as an ingredient. And it's just really this really intense, well-balanced dish that has you know, herbs and stuff, you know, sprinkled over the top, and this oil made from the shellfish shells. So
that's
we take
really
the shrimp heads and make this oil. And pour that over the top, too.
So you have it presented on skewers?
Yeah, that's to keep them straight, so that way they don't curl during the cooking process. So it's kind of a, you know, a simple way of doing that. You don't have to. I mean, it certainly made the photography look better. But it also it eats better, too. You know?
All right. Lots of great creative recipes in here that look like you could pull these off at home, folks. Home is what it's called. Recipes to Cook with Family and Friends by Brian Voltaggio. Master chef and owner of, 9 restaurants in our region now, including Agio in Baltimore and Family Meal in Frederick, Baltimore. And Brian will be out in Frederick on Saturday at 2 o'clock at the Barnes & Noble in the Francis Scott Key Mall with copies of his book, Home. Nice to have you on the show,
oh,
Brian.
Thank
this
you.
Is a real treat. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Don't forget you have lunch.
Yeah, I can smell it from here. thank you, everybody, for tuning into our first hour. This is the first hour of Midday. We've got another hour of Midday coming up. Eddie's of Roland Park providing lunch for us as well today. So thank you for that, and thank you again to Brian and everybody on his staff. A short break for the news. We'll be back with our second hour.